And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
Timothy.
Okay.
Timothy. How's your microphone?
It sounds great.
I changed out the XLR cable. I know there was a little bit of a buzz for Forrest, but no, I think we might have found it.
I really love Forrest.
Yeah, that was a good episode. I hope you guys enjoyed. I enjoyed.
What did the comments say?
I don't know. Haven't seen much. People were excited. We posted one clip. They were excited that he was on the show.
Cool. I think it's great having people in here.
Oh, it's the best.
We're going to do something a little bit different on Saturday.
That is true. Saturday, Morgan's going on a mission.
I'm going to do my best to not fuck it up, you know? I'm going to do my best because I think the thing that is shitty and stressful is just like, you know, I think worrying about setting it up and making sure that everything is good is in itself shitty compared to the other part where it's being prepared for an interview. I think those, they like,
yeah,
it'll be fine though. And I'm up for the challenge. And I think it would just be the only like thing that stresses me out is that it's like with the Get Up Kids.
Yeah. I mean, they're your heroes. They love those guys.
They're definitely a big, like a very big influence in my life. And from listening to some interviews with them.
You a little scared?
Yeah. Like, I think it's just like a lot of things. It's like A, listening to interviews with them. B, that I like them so much. See me setting up some sort of like electronic thing,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then doing an interview in like an unknown spot.
You don't have home field advantage.
Yeah. And I'm fine with that, but I think it's good to, it's like if one of those things was two of them, mm-hmm. like that's fine. But like all of it, I'm like, I'm worrying for no reason. It's going to be fine.
It'll be fine.
It'll be absolutely fine.
Unless Matt Pryor yells at you.
I kind of hope that he does, but I at the same time, like, I think I know how to approach it. I think I know how to approach like this interview in a way that he won't be annoyed.
He might be annoyed.
He'll probably be annoyed.
Confront you.
I am annoying is the thing.
Maybe he'll say, hey, aren't you that guy from the observatory show that was not paying attention when you were watching my band?
That would be, I don't know if I should bring that up.
No, probably not.
There's probably a, like,
maybe,
dude,
I don't
the
know.
Thing is like when I'm like in it, I don't hear it sounding bad, you know? And then I think back and I'm like, shouldn't have said that. It's like, well, you know, I had to walk back the acceptance shit that I said. I was literally at a fucking show and I was getting yelled at by the guys in acceptance, but like they are also like half kidding too. Like they were like half kidding, but I was like, look, it was a bad example. The example that I was using was not what I was trying to say. And I used a wrong example, but they're excited to come on and probably like fuck with me.
I hope
like,
they come in studio.
Yeah, we can see. But I do, you know, look, I was talking to somebody today who was telling me, she's like, I love sitting and listening to your, I like love cleaning my place and listening to your guys's podcast. Feels like I'm there with you. And I was like, I get dragged or like have to walk something back every episode, which is fine. Like I'm fine with doing that or get in trouble with somebody because I said some shit about somebody's like personal thing. Every episode, I like somebody is mad at me.
I think, you know, that's what makes you great at the format of radio is because you're just chatting and being yourself and, you know, saying whatever comes up to your mind.
Yeah. And I know that some people don't like that. I know that that style is not for everybody. I'm like aware of it, you guys. It doesn't mean I'm not going to do it. I think the first step in any of that stuff is at least the acknowledgement.
Yeah, admitting that you have a problem.
Admitting that you are powerless over being annoying is the first step. So that is that is the, you know, we're at least there. So,
well, today, guys, we're going to be talking about the Get Up Kids, Something to Write Home About. It was released September 28th, 1999.
I want to talk about why we're doing this. Like, sure, I think it was,
we absolutely can. We got a whole episode ahead of us.
I think it's, so what we're trying to do is, I looked at the list of albums that we had, and I was like, why don't we do an album that I really like, and then one you really like, or that we want to know, because we don't like the exact same things. And I think that that is a fun thing to do, to be like, all right, I really fuck with this, I don't know too much about it, or you really fuck with it, you don't know too much about it. Then we can, I think that that's good. It's better for us too, because I'm like, I don't fucking, like, some of the albums that we've had done, like, I don't care. Yeah.
Well, it's good. I was thinking about it, yeah, when I was doing research for this, because it's really broadened, this podcast has really broadened my horizons and, like, opened my eyes to a lot of things that I didn't necessarily pay super close attention to. And I feel like, as people who have now made a career over the last 10 years off of this genre, it's important for us to look deep into these albums.
It really is important. Like, and that's why, like, even the ones that I'm not, like, I like, you know, I think it's so good to know about it. And then what the thing that ends up happening is I'm like, oh, now I do like this. Mm-hmm. It's very rare where I will listen to an album and not find one redeeming quality about it, or something that, like, I.
Yeah. Except for Acceptance, right?
It is a look. It's a perfect album. It's 10 out of 10. No parts or songs are bad. I'm walking it back.
All right. So this album came out in September 28th, 1999, which I was 10 years old. It came out through Vagrant Records and the band's own sub imprint label called Heroes and Villains Records. This was a definitive album for the quote unquote second wave of emo. But don't you dare tell them that they are part of emo, or they will kill you.
So look, this is going to be, we get to be the annoying Ian Coens of the world. And in this episode, we get to take cause I feel like this specific album, this specific, like, subgenre of emo, you get the most annoying son of a bitches on earth talking about this.
Yes.
In ways that are so fucking.
We actually posted a meme about it today on our account. I approved it. So let me see if it's gone up. It should be going up right now. It was that guy.
Yeah.
That was
like, the guy that I said, David Cross.
Yeah. David Cross. This is not Midwest emo.
Look,
let me see if I can pull it up for the.
Well, they're not. The thing is they're whatever. It doesn't, none of this shit matters. Call it whatever you want. If it helps you, go for it. They're not technically Midwest emo, I don't think, but it also, at the end of the day, doesn't fucking matter, is the thing. None of it matters.
None of it matters. The thing that does matter is that this is a great album. It is the blueprint for everything, every sort of, like, pop emo that came after it. Like, this sounds like The Starting Line. This sounds like Motion City Soundtrack. This sounds like all those bands that got big in 2002 and beyond.
The thing about the Get Up Kids is that there were artists that kind of sounded like them, or they kind of sounded like some artist, but nobody sounded like them. And I think, especially with 4 Minute Mile, the album that came out before this, was, in my opinion, like, I would say that that's, like, the best emo album of all time. Like, I think that that is, like, if you're like, what is emo to anybody from our age to, like, who's growing up listening to it now, I would be like, that, listen to that, you'll get a good idea of it. Does it matter that I think that and I'm wrong, or whoever, whatever the fuck, it doesn't. But to me, that's, like, what I consider emo.
There's a quote from Mr. Peter Wentz where he's talking about the importance of 4 Minute Mile to Fall Out Boy. He says there should be a How to Be a Pop Punk Kid starter kit with bands like the Get Up Kids, so kids would know whose shoulders bands like us are standing on. Mm. Fall Out Boy would not be a band if it were not for the Get Up Kids' 4 Minute Mile.
It's interesting you say that, because they had Beef Alert. Beef Alert! But in the late 90s, like Blink made fun of the Get Up Kids and, you know, calling them the whiniest band of all time. And which, like, I get why somebody would say they're not, but I get why it's it. But Jim
DeWeese.
Suptic later responded by saying, without us, there would be no Fall Out Boy. And without Fall Out Boy, there wouldn't be no Blink 182 reunion.
That is maybe true, but they just, like, I don't know, man. I feel like they're really on edge and they're really,
I know.
It's like, you guys are so great and so influential to so many people at this point. I think you should embrace it. I just read right here, Mark Hoppus is a big fan. Well, you know, he said that he proposed to his wife to the Get Up Kids song, I'll Catch You.
Anybody who's in bands or that are playing around that time or any around that genre even were like so influenced by the Get Up Kids. And I think that you're right. It is something to super embrace, but that's like telling somebody to be like, hey, why don't you just not be depressed? Yeah. You know, that's like,
you tried not being that way.
Have you just tried not being sad? So it's like, or, you know, whatever. Have you just tried not doing this? It's like saying the same sort of thing. So I get it. I wish they would, but, you know, fucking maybe in time, or maybe they are now. Who the fuck knows? We'll find out on Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So this album, like we mentioned, it's a defining album for pop punk. And I think we touched on it a little bit in the Hello Goodbye episode when we were talking about the Get Up Kids and Reggie and the Full Effect, but the integration of synths, and that is largely due to the band's new member that joined for this album, James DeWeese.
I'm going to do this, and then I'll say the thing that I want to say.
What?
Like, I think it's good. You say something that is like a fact.
Well, this is how you start a conversation. You say a thing, and then you're like, yes, I love the synth on this, blah, blah, blah. James DeWeese is such an important part. I love Reggie and the Full Effect. This is how conversations work.
I don't know that. I feel like I'm just interrupting every time because I'm like, ugh. So that is super important, not only because that was like that's what I thought electronic music was.
Yeah.
Was literally just the Get Up Kids had synth in it. And then there was a drum machine on like the end of Jimmy Eat World's Clarity. And I was like, that's electronic music. Yeah. That's like all I thought. But at the same time, there was like there was not a lot of bands doing that, and they did it like simple, so it was like it was hard to be like, oh yeah, they are a synth rock band, because they're not, or they're electronic because they're not.
They're a synth rock band in the way Motion City is a synth rock band. Like, it's not, it's still like a rock band, but it has like the woo woo.
Yeah, which is like, I got that sound. I found it.
I'm gonna, mini Moog.
Yeah, I didn't get the keyboard. I got the plug-in.
You got a patch.
But the thing about the Get Up Kids that I think is so important was they were, you know, emo. The people are going to be like, emo started from, and be fucking annoying as shit about everything. They're not hardcore enough to like be in that side of like where emo started. They're not experimental enough to be on like the like Mineral or whatever the fuck Texas Is the Reason situation of that side. They're not like pop enough to be on like, I don't know, when it started leaning like really, really poppy, before pop punk became more pop than punk. They fit in this like very strange sound that is distinctly them and kind of only them. And that's why I think it's really like, they were like, oh yeah, this is, to me at least, I was like, that's why this is emo, because it, you can tell, but it's its own thing.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely was pop in the sense like it brought this like pop sensibility to punk kind of for the first time. And it also brought this like emotional sensibility to punk for the first time. I think, you know, they were influenced by those bands like Mineral and Fugazi and.
Yeah. Which is like, you don't, Fugazi, like, doesn't set, like, he doesn't Fozzy. It doesn't really, like, this does not, I couldn't be like, oh yeah, that sounds like this, maybe like some parts, but not really. I know they're also really into a lot of that like synth 80s rock.
Well, did you look up the history of James DeWeese's career?
I didn't. I figured that you would have.
Like, you don't know this. You're like the biggest. I figured this would be your thing that you, because you're obsessed with Reggie and the Full Effect.
I do love Reggie.
And yeah, so that was like James's his side project. He was originally in a band called Coalesce.
Yes.
And he, I guess, was the singer and or was asked to be the singer. And then they were like, there was some tension about that. And then Coalesce broke up and then they reunited. And then James was moved to drums. And that's originally like how he met and bonded with the Get Up Kids. I guess Coalesce was like playing this hardcore show. And then at the end of the hardcore show, James threw his drum into the crowd and it hit some girl in the head. And then like some other kids grabbed the drum and like ran away with it. And they were all chasing after it to try and get his drum back. And then they like became friends with the Get Up Kids.
See, like those are the things that like, I don't, the thing about me, I didn't really care about like the history of stuff. If I liked it, like I was like, all I needed to do was just like it.
Yeah. So then he's like playing with the Get Up Kids full time. And then he starts writing some more songs that are like synthy, and then he fucking goes off and does Reggie at the Full Effect. And then, dude, he like his history, he worked on Newfound Glory Catalyst. And then in 2007, he joined My Chemical Romance as their touring keyboardist.
Yeah, so, he's like a baller fucking piano player.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, he's had a great career. He's like, he's just a legend. Like, if you look at his discography, it's Coalesce, Get Up Kids, Reggie and the Full Effect, Newfound Glory, My Chemical Romance. And then it's just like everybody's side projects, like Frank Iero, Gerard Way, Matt Pryor, Death Spells. Like, cool. Fucking awesome. This is his debut with the band. And I think this is kind of like really where the Get Up Kids kind of gelled for the first time. Not discounting 4 Minute Mile, but I think this is like a breakthrough for them.
It is, because these are, I think, you know, we were listening to that interview that they did with whatever that fucking Brooklyn Vegan. Mm-hmm. And Matt Pryor said something like that I didn't even consider because I just like the songs. But 4 Minute Mile, it was like they're kids. They didn't know about song structure. And so those songs kind of didn't really, there was no like, you have to put an intro, a fucking verse, bridge. Like, you didn't follow any of that stuff. I mean, it did to an extent because they're songs, but I think something to write home about, they grew up so much as musicians and songwriters from those two albums that these songs are like, oh, this is a full song. Like, every song on that album feels like a full song. And I do feel like, as much as I love, which I love 4 Minute Mile, I'm not discounting it at all. And I think that that's what makes it amazing, is that sometimes it just feels like parts put together to make a song. Also, like the chord progressions and the actual whatever music that's coming out of the instrument, like there was less, that's where I can see like the more Fugazi, mm-hmm. the more like punk or hardcore emo-ish shit influence instead of Something to Write Home About. Something to Write Home About feels like they're growing in, it does feel like, or you're like, damn, this is a band.
Usually that kind of stuff would be reliant on a producer, but they didn't really have a producer on this one. They did record it in a fancy studio here in Los Angeles. They recorded it at Mad Hatter Studios in Silver Lake, but they still sort of like self-produced it. There were a couple of engineers/producers, but like pretty much it was produced by the Get Up Kids. One of them is a man named Chad Blindman, who was my professor at Berkeley.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He also worked with some production classes. But he also worked with the guys who did Legion of Doom, our original predecessors who combined emo and EDM.
Bro, I do not know what you said.
You don't
said,
know about Legion of Doom? I
literally don't know what you just said.
You don't remember Legion of Doom?
No.
Dude, there were these like bootleg mashups that were floating around on LimeWire of people mashing up electronic music with like Dashboard Confessional.
I didn't know
brand
that.
New.
I had no
it
idea.
It was called Legion of Doom. It was like two producers.
Didn't know that, but I did know. All I thought, the only thing I remember was Girl Talk.
This, the quiet screaming.
I like don't think I've ever heard this. Okay, so they just like I didn't know this existed.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple other like edits, and I remember these getting passed around all over.
Are some of them like pretty good? Or
yeah,
I'll go back and listen to them. But I read a cool quote that today. It was really hard to sift through a lot of Get Up Kids stuff because everybody that writes about him is so fucking goddamn annoying. So it's like, you gotta try and find nuggets. And unfortunately, Ian Cohen does have a lot of really good points and good things to say about them.
Like what?
Oh, I mean, like he, let's see, did I write anything that he said? He said, put aside the love songs and their classic Something Right Home About can be read as a concept album about the pressure of seeing then fledging indie label Vagrant literally bet the farm on their success. They also wrote concisely and passionately about girls, heartbreak, and trouble with authority, thus setting the norms for the 21st century emo. While the band's presentation and ethics were overtly punk, their songs hardened back to early rock and roll records that functioned as teen pop. Like he's really good at describing this shit.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. So he said that Vagrant Records bet the farm.
Yes.
I'm sure, I don't know if anybody on this podcast knows, but there is a lot of lore about Vagrant Records making this huge investment in the Get Up Kids. Like they offered them a record deal, and then the dude who started Vagrant, he had his parents like remortgage their house.
Yes.
So that he could pay for this album.
Wonder how old he was.
And the Get Up Kids led Vagrant to attract a whole bunch of other great bands and signings to their label over the years, like Dashboard Confessional and Saves the Day, and so many other bands were attracted to go work with Vagrant because the Get Up Kids were so influential and fairly actually, you know, commercially successful. By 2002, it sold 150,000 copies. Like, that's a huge amount of albums. People were still buying CDs back then, but that's a lot of records.
I mean, I don't know. I have like no, I don't, you know, I think we've done this one time where it's like, how do you compare?
Yeah. Like it's like, how do you compare that to streams?
Yeah. Now? Like, I don't know. I also like, don't know like what other artists were selling at the time for like a comparison. But I mean, this is another good quote that I don't know who fucking said it. An artist might attempt to start a viral TikTok dance to promote their music, but this was 1996. The album came out in 99. But the Get Up Kids did the only thing that they could. They sent demo cassettes to every rock label listed in the pages of Billboard's Musicians' Guides to Touring and Promotion.
Well, that must have been how they got signed to Doghouse that originally.
Is the label that responded. Was Doghouse.
And then they kind of wanted to get out of the Doghouse deal, and they ended up like giving up the vinyl rights to their older releases so that they could get out of the record contract early. And then they were being courted by majors. Like they were in talks with Sub Pop and Mojo. And then I guess the deal with Mojo fell apart and they ended up going with Vagrant. And, you know, I don't know. I wonder what would have happened if they had signed with a major. Like the whole course of emo history might have changed forever.
I don't know. I mean, I think it did with this album, but like to the extent that it, you know, like maybe quicker or other bands that would have never fucking or artists that like never, you know, are discovering it later. Like Andrew McMahon said something yesterday with like asking, I was like, what if you were to do that? He said a good quote that was like, I don't like to live in the.
Yeah. Like, I don't remember what it was.
I forgot what he said, but I was like, that's, I get it. Like, I get not wanting to do that. But sometimes I'm like, what if though? What if, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, it's fun to.
I do that sometimes. I think about, what if like we didn't have the pandemic?
Yeah.
Like, what would our lives be like? They'd be so different.
I think it's fun to think about that stuff sometimes. And especially when we're like talking about it in this context, it's like, what if they were to have gone to a label like, or yeah. a major? Like, I think it is really, I think it's fun to think about. So sometimes it's super annoying because you're like, no, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way to fucking know. I did find out some things that like, I didn't know. I didn't know that Matt Pryor started out as a guitarist and took on lead vocals.
There's some tracks on here that feature Jim Suptic on lead vocals.
Yeah.
Including one of my faves, one of my standout tracks, 10 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it's
everybody's standout. It's probably the most like poppy, like straight ahead pop.
Yeah. It's an awesome song. I like that they wrote about sitting in traffic. That kicks ass. I like that their biggest song is about like sitting in traffic. That kicks ass. But yeah, he's wild thing is like as distinct as Matt Pryor's voice is, I didn't even realize that it was somebody else singing for a long time.
Yeah. I also didn't realize that until I researched this,
which is really strange because you're like, I know that that's Matt Pryor. Cause his voice is so unique.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's funny. He's one of those guys that like that voice doesn't look like it should come out of that guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I always really, really like that.
What does he look like now?
Beard.
Oh yeah. This is him.
Perfect. Yeah. Mm-hmm, that's, it's going to be interesting to interview him on Saturday. I have so many fucking fond memories of like this band with my friends. Like it was strange. Cause like, this was like an album. There's, you know, the albums that you like go around and fucking sing in your car with your friends,
with your homies.
This was like the big one for us. Like,
I'm sure. Yeah.
This one was like the big one. And like my friends would cover.
You were prime age. You were like 15,
yeah.
16. Yeah. So like your friends were probably just getting their licenses.
Well, you met my friend Todd.
Yeah.
And he had this handicap van that he like painted like the mystery machine. I think I've talked about it before, but he had that door that just went out of the side while we were driving. And on the, on 4 Minute Mile, at least there was a song that starts with "Forgive Me." Mm-hmm. And I just remember people like go like sliding out of that thing, driving past a light and going, "Forgive me." Like it just doesn't, you know,
wait, like the handicap thing, like a thing to get wheelchairs into the van.
Yeah,
and then so you guys would like fucking use it while you were driving. While you were driving.
So you were like half out of the car while you were driving. you were buckled in, but it was like, it was.
That's so scary.
It was very dangerous.
Yeah.
It was very, very, very dangerous. Like my friend Rome, who was the singer of Table for One, that band that I was in high school, he wrote the funniest, like this is the, it's, they also started like kind of where I think I developed like a sense of humor around this time, like what I think is specifically funny. Rome wrote, like he kept calling Red Letter Day Red Toilet Day. Like I don't know, like no reason why, no specific thing, no nothing. And I think that, you know, at least growing up, when you were developing the things that you really, really liked and the things that kind of shaped you as a person, this album was very much like the soundtrack for all of those things that I did, which is why it also means so much to me. Not just the fact that it's like kind of the core of why what we do is for work, but it was also just like a very influential album for my life.
For your youth.
Yeah.
The Get Up Kids was one of the first concerts I went to actually. I remember I went to see Dashboard Confessional and the Get Up Kids were opening and I bought a Get Up Kids CD, but it wasn't this album. It was the one like after this What's that one after this called?
It's not the Guilt Show.
It's the one with Mass Pike on it.
Last night on the Mass Pike. Was it the Wood? What would they did like
That's
a
the Woodson EP?
Yeah. Is it? Is it on that one?
I feel like that came out before.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. I don't like timelines. I'm like, I don't fucking know timelines and Billboard shit. And sales,
I don't know. It all gets confusing too because at this time, guys, a lot of us weren't buying CDs. Like, I think I found the Mass Pike song on Kazaa or LimeWire, and we would just burn the CDs, and you kind of just like found what you could and downloaded it and like hoped it was in the right order.
And it was also, it was like on a CD. Yeah. And you're like, I don't know when this, it's like you kind of put it on the thing. So it's like, yeah, this album could have come out 5 years before you have like the rest of another album on it. And you're like, it's very interesting. Like, that's a very good point to bring up.
But I remember Mass Pike was the first song that I got from the Get Up Kids that I like first like connected with, but that came out in 2005. So that's literally like 6 years later. Like that's when I started getting into emo music when I was 16.
Look, they also put out like the, what I think is a better like, you know, there are people do covers people do covers of songs. I think that they did a better version of The Cure's Close to Me.
Oh yeah.
Like I think it's just a better version.
Is that just like B-side thing? I think
it was around this time though. I think it was like on, that's, I don't know. It was around then, but it was, I think it was on the same thing as Mass Pike. All of this, again, podcast of misinformation.
Live at the Granada is what Mass Pike is telling me, but I don't remember it being a live recording.
I don't either.
Morgan, what are your favorite songs off of this album?
Dude, I don't know. What's the one that I... Summer swallowed us all.
What song is that? Action, Action?
No, I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, I don't know the names of... I just know this album.
You just know the album.
Every part, front to back.
Close to Home is what that song is called.
That is like one of my favorite songs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really like every song on this album.
Are there any that you don't like?
No. Unfortunately, there's just not. Like, the Get Up Kids was like a 10 out of 10. For me, for a really...
Even the slow ones?
Yeah. I really like...
You're not usually a slow song guy.
I grew into really liking that.
What about Valentine?
Love it.
You do?
Yeah. I think all of the songs are good.
Did you ever put Valentine on a mixed CD for a girl?
No, but I did. There's a lot of 4 Minute Mile on mixed CDs.
Mm. I mean, Valentine, I feel like, is such a cliche mixed CD song. Let me just play a clip. Valentine by Get Up Kids. All right, I'm gonna put on Close to Home.
I also think that they did the thing where you hear the whatever, dare I say, it's like the twinkly part of the song. It's just like one.
Are you talking about the guitar?
Three notes.
They're arpeggiating.
Yeah,
like
they did it the best, I think.
Yeah, I heard, in the Brooklyn Vegan interview, the interviewer calls them Midwest emo. He's like, Midwest emo is not the Get Up Kids. It actually refers to a very specific type of math rocky guitar part that is worked into, and it's like, okay.
Yeah,
bro.
Would you guys, it would be so awesome if everybody wasn't so fucking annoying. Like, that could have just been like a
He's like, well, you're like an emo band from Kansas City. And he's like, no, that is not what that term means.
Everybody's just like, everybody shut up, cares. Like, I literally just want everybody to shut the fuck up.
It's a good album. It's enjoyable.
I love it. I don't care if it's like, dude, you could call this album Crunkcore and I would be like, sure, it's awesome.
You know what I want to point out about this album, like one song title in particular, I'm a Loner Dottie, comma, a Rebel. I think that is the beginning of the Fall Out Boy song title names.
So it's funny you say that, and that's a good point because so many bands that like later rose to fame, including Paramore, Fall Out Boy, My Chemical Romance, have cited the Get Up Kids as a major influence with something to write home about, especially being a key album in that inspiration. Tom, especially Tom from Blink, which even after, I think they were just fucking around and they're like, they're the whiniest band of all time. Like, I think that that's, they were literally just like fucking around because Tom really, really loves the Get Up Kids. Really loves the Get Up Kids.
I was going to ask you if you, you know, you are basically already answered it, but this album is kind of long. Like, I feel like they could have taken like one or two songs off, but it's fine. It is what it is.
Yeah. The thing is, like, I don't view it that way. I think it's because I like it so much.
Yeah.
But there's some other albums like that are the same length where I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, stop. You don't need to add another chorus to the end of the song. Just cut it out.
Well, I think that this was kind of the era too, though, where it wasn't so popular to be like refining your shit. You're just like, no, it's fine. It can be what it is. It's art.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, when they, people do say that they like have influence from those like art hardcore bands, those artier hardcore, artistic-y hardcore bands. Like, I think that that's where we get to, they kind of do that. They take liberty with being like, cool, what if we just made this a little bit longer and made this a little bit instrumental or did this. So I do think like that in that way that there's inspiration from it, which might be cause for length of the album. Yeah, this is just not something that like I can find one bad thing about. And that is
maybe personal bias, but maybe it just is that perfect, yeah, in your eyes. Yeah. That's fine.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm open to being wrong, but I do think that this album in particular, like, I personally, like, I like 4 Minute Mile more. It doesn't mean that it's better because I like, I think this is also as amazing, but 4 Minute Mile means more to me. But yeah. I, if somebody put a gun in my head, I wouldn't know which one to choose, honestly, which I like them this, but 4 Minute Mile is like, I was like, damn dude, that like, that defined my ass, mm-hmm. you know? But I also really think that a lot of the stuff that they did afterwards is so good. Like some of the albums that they put out after these two, you know, I know that they, like, I feel like they also kind of get bummed when people are like, yeah, these are like, you know, I love their first two albums.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are some fucking amazing songs that, and like some of the album, they're just, they are good songwriters.
Guilt Show. That was my first Get Up Kids album, 2004.
Yeah. 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 That, which is,
I just recognized the cover.
Hold on. Let me look up what song on the, on, see, I just don't know any name. On a Wire, On a Wire was fucking slamming. Like the one that came out after Something Right Home About. On a Wire was awesome. It was like, I think then they were like, we're the Beatles now. Like they did it. And you know, when every band does that,
mm-hmm.
I think that was
their Beatles phase.
Yeah. But they did it awesome. And I don't think, damn it. I hope they don't get mad at me for saying that, but like it, you know, every band does it. It's okay. It's like an okay thing to do. And I think you guys did it really, really well. And I'm sorry, but really like every fucking song, like this is a killer fucking opening.
Oh yeah. You always sing this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. This song is great.
Like that, this one. See how like, it's like, but like this is a great album. I every single one of these songs. This song, fuck dude, this song is what I sampled that other day when I made that thing I showed you where I remixed a Get Up Kid song that he's gonna kick my ass. It's awesome. I know we're not talking about this album. I just love the Get Up Kids.
We'll have to do another one on a Wire.
I really love it. I have some fun facts.
Let's hear them.
Which I didn't know. I didn't know this shit. They opened up in 2001. They opened up for Green Day in Europe.
I did hear that. Yeah.
Crowds were not into them.
Really?
No. They said the fans threw shit at them.
Oh my God.
And it was like one of the toughest tours they ever did.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. Really, really. And then also on tour with Morrissey, they got yeah.
They got some good gigs.
Yeah, but they got so fucked up, they got kicked off of tour. Which, like, I never pegged them for, like, that.
Really?
Yeah, but Morrissey's also kind of a huge pussy.
Yeah, who knows what really happened?
Yeah, so.
He's an asshole.
Yeah, and so they also, this is a really cool fact. They played, when they played the Warped Tour in the late 90s, most of the lineup was punk and ska bands. Yes. Emo hadn't become mainstream, and so they were like the, like kind of the very much odd band out.
The weirdos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that, on that Warped Tour. In, I think that that's really cool that they were like kind of the first emo band on Warped Tour.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Cause it was like, you know, all punk and ska.
Yeah, that's really cool.
They also, I guess that they were in talks. This is another what would have happened. They're in talks with, like early talks about including Something to Row Home About songs in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
Ooh.
But the deal never went through.
That is a missed paycheck. I'm sorry, boys.
I know. And so it's like, they might have gained, like, you know, yeah, it's fucking crazy.
Damn.
I know. They also wrote a song for a car commercial that I don't know what brand of car, but it never came out. So there's an unreleased
Get Up Kids car commercial song.
Yeah.
Huh.
While Something to Write Home About became a defining album of the second wave emo movement, guitarist Jim Suptic has expressed frustration with how the genre evolved, criticizing later mall emo bands for turning it into a commercialized style. Which, like, I get. Fully get it. I'm fully right there with you guys. I get it. I like all that stuff, but I just, I like stuff. And, but I get when you, like, kind of make a thing and then, it's like when Dashboard, you know, he was like, I don't want to be labeled emo. It's like,
yeah,
it's the emo, all goes back to the, like, emo is a bad word.
Sure.
Situation.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Action in Action was inspired by a real life prank.
What is the prank?
Dude, here's the thing. I don't understand the prank. It is
a prank, bro. It's a prank.
Where they repeatedly use the phrase Action in Action during conversations to mess with people. I think they might have just said it.
I get. So maybe you're like having conversations and you just like try to work it in and then like the other person's not into it.
I just
and
like
you
don't
get
like
more
the,
points.
Just like don't know
like
the context. I'm sure that that's like what it is.
Yeah.
I was like very cautious. I was really like worried to go on Reddit because I was like, oh my God, I'm going to fucking hate all of you.
Sure.
I was so worried to do it, but there were some really good quotes from Reddit. This one was one of them. Punks wouldn't have been caught dead listening to this in 99, and there was no separate category. There was no punks and emo kids. There were punks and emo kids, no in between. But I, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, you sort of had to be there. This album's influence over the next few years was vast. Another very great quote that I really love, and I'm like, encompasses kind of how I feel about this. I'm pushing 36, and when I was 13 and 14, I didn't know what punk or emo was. I just knew that I liked the sound of whatever I was listening to, and I think that is very funny. I also have another funny quote. I don't know if I want to say it. I'll say it. Matt Pryor was a dick to me in 2006. He seemed annoyed that I liked his best record. Sorry, man. A million people wish they could write anything like Something to Write Home About.
I'm so excited for you to interview Matt Pryor.
Yeah, it's going to be rough.
All right. Well, before we jump into our interview with Matt Pryor, let's do some If You Like This, You Might Like That. I mean, I mentioned it already, Motion City Soundtrack, Hello Goodbye, those because of the synth. But I think a more modern band that is Get Up Kids-y is probably like The Hotelier.
That's my about as close as you can get to a 4 minute mile with a current band.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that was like, they did something on that album.
Yeah. And then their album after that was really bad.
Yeah. I mean, look, it can't all be winner or turnover.
Acceptance.
Here, I have a lot of bands that if you do like this album, if you haven't listened to this album, please just like do it, give it a shot. I know you may have reservations about it because like it's all, whatever, just listen to this album. It's great. But if you do find out that you like this album, we spoke about it. Reggie is great because not only are some of the guys in it, but it also was another at the time, like nothing, it was like nothing like it in the scene. It was like funny and electronic, and it was kind of a joke band, but a lot of the songs were not jokes.
Right. It just has that like funnier edge to it.
Yeah, it was, which is interesting.
Less
for,
serious
which,
at
which
the
was
time.
Super interesting for this like yeah. genre. It's like funny and weird and good all at the same
paved
time.
Paved the way for 303 and crunkcore.
Yeah,
eventually.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Like, then some really good bands to listen to that if you're like, I want to dive a little bit on the, they're like less poppy, like, but incredible. Sunny Day Real Estate, Boys Night Out, Jets to Brazil, the Jealous Sound, which got overlooked a lot.
Mm.
Really, really, really.
I always get them confused with the Hush Sound.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not, I never.
I don't know what either of them sound
the,
like.
The Jealous Sound was like a very, another one of those bands that like, I had just gotten on a burned CD. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who the fuck is, who is this?
Yeah.
And then Cursive
Cursive.
Yeah, they, I wouldn't say that they like.
Cursive is like if Bright Eyes and Get Up Kids had a baby.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah.
Like they had sex with alcohol.
Yeah.
And then had a baby.
Yeah.
And then Matt Pryor's solo projects, because like I think his voice, if you like the Get Up Kids and you like his voice, you're going to like all of Matt Pryor's solo shit. New Amsterdam's was at the time, you know.
They're not called that anymore.
What are they called?
The Old Amsterdam's.
Well, that's it. We're done with the podcast forever. That's,
thank you guys.
This is the forever. There's going to be no more episodes.
Cause Matt Pryor is going to shoot us.
Yeah. He's going to be very mad at me. So, well, I hope not. Maybe you want to know what, maybe I catch him on like a day where he's like,
yeah, maybe he'll be in a good mood.
Or maybe all of this shit is just not real.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's other people's perceptions of it.
Maybe. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Here's our interview with Matt Pryor. Find out if he killed us after this. Bye.
Bye.
Don't like interviews that follow.
That's you fine.
Know, you've said this.
I've been around the block. We're good.
Yeah, you've said the same shit a billion times, and I didn't.
Trust me, I know.
Yeah, and I like don't want to. That's like not what I want to do. Yeah. When I listen to interviews, I don't want to hear the same thing that I can just like look
totally.
Up. Hello, Matt Pryor.
Hi.
From the Get Up Kids.
Hello.
Surreal.
I don't know how far apart.
I think it should just work, but okay. surreal thing. We were just talking that this is a wild thing for me to be doing. This is a hard one. I gotta tell you, I'm usually real. I've never.
Oh, can I do anything to make it less difficult?
No, I think you did. I think it's myself. You know, I gotta get over that thing.
I get it.
There was like, have you ever done it? Like over the years, like been like, oh shit, I don't know how to.
Yeah. Well, like new situations, yes. Like interviews, no.
No.
But. You know, there's a handful of people that I've been afraid to meet, you know? And so, like, but for the most part, I just try to go into situations and just kind of see where the wind takes me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to. But yeah. It's just awesome. But anyway, congratulations. That's something to write home about, the 25th anniversary.
Yep.
You know, is there a reason you put out the demos? Because I love them.
It's not even all of them. that
really?
That was just what would fit on one LP. The funny thing is that, like, Jim unearthed them. I didn't know we even had them. And Jim found,
what
like...
What were they on?
They were, like, a cassette. Like, they found them on an old cassette, and then Rob and Ryan have a studio in Ryan's house, and they got, like, an old tape deck and, like, dumped the cassettes into Pro Tools and, like, EQ'd them a bit. And then Rob and I had to go through and listen to... Because there's some demo songs that are just like, I don't even know what the hell that is.
Right.
Like, I don't even know what song that is. And it may not have even been... Because it's just like me and an acoustic guitar. You know what I mean?
It's fucking awesome. No, it's awesome. And I like that you didn't go in and, like, tune any... You just kind of...
No, and it was... But it was a very much a, like... I've listened to him exactly once.
Yeah.
Because I hate the way the vocals sound.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, I hope that people appreciate this because it's painful for me to listen to, but, you know... I see the value in it.
There is value. I mean, when somebody like I, you know, I'm going back and I'm like, you know, I know those songs for now 25 years and hearing them in a different light. And, you know, I think there's something really special about knowing that you guys were kids and those are the demos that those were real.
And oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like a manufactured
thing. No, it's they're fucking awesome. And I'm really happy you did put that out.
Well, maybe eventually we'll put out the deluxe edition that'll be, like, four LPs.
I mean,
in.
I've always considered... The thing... I'm just, like, I can't even read my hand. I wrote
That's
this
okay.
on the way here. I just want to talk to you. I mean, I always consider... I've listened to a bunch of interviews with you, and I think that you and I kind of share somewhat of a similar thing where people can't really read us if we're, like, fucking around
or
joking.
Oh, people just think I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this last night because I called, so during like a really, really quiet part in the set last night, some guy just goes, yeah, like really loud. And it broke me. Like I was on SNL. Like I just started laughing in the middle of the song.
Yeah.
And so afterwards I just kind of said in the mic, I was just like, you motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I was trying to get the crowd to clap along in a part. And I said, you motherfuckers up in that balcony. And
then
I was like, I really got to stop calling the crowd motherfuckers because I don't mean it in a negative get off my lawn kind of way, even though that's kind of what my vibe seems to be. I'm the curmudgeonly old man or whatever, but it's just like I just mean that as like a term of endearment.
That's the way I feel. And so like I think that there's like a couple interviews that I've listened to where like I think that the interviewer was, that's also probably why I was a little bit fearful of coming in here.
I've been an interviewer enough times that I can listen to if someone's asking me something I don't want to talk about or if they're taking it in a direction that I don't agree with, then I don't feel uncomfortable. I feel comfortable, like, I guess, correcting them or making sure that I'm understood.
You are a really good podcaster.
I try. I haven't done it in a minute.
Yeah.
I don't think I've done it since I've been sober.
it's a different experience.
Yeah, I imagine.
Is playing a little bit strange?
No, not anymore. I mean, I was a little nervous about it the first time I did it, but it didn't really feel that much different, to be honest. It's more about my issues with playing were like anxiety based, and you know, then I would drink to like try to make that go away, and that doesn't, it works like for a short period of time and then it doesn't work anymore.
Then it goes in reverse and makes it worse.
But once I'm on stage, I'm at work. I'm basically, you know, like I just plant my feet and I'm just onward and, you know.
It's a strange thing because this was something that like I never planned. We never planned to do this. This was like a thing. And now I'm doing research on all of these artists that I just really like. And so I'm like, I never look up an interview with any of these people. I just like their music.
That's fine.
And
I think you're overthinking this.
I am.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I wouldn't worry about it.
Usually, I mean, we do this all the time. Yeah. We do it with so many artists and I don't really, it's never like a thing. And for some reason, this one is, it's an important one to me. The albums that like shaped my life are, one of yours is, and that's, I'm sure you've heard it 8 billion times. But let me add to the 8 billion and one, that is the thing. And the cool thing about it is when I was growing up, I always thought Get Up Kids was a pop band. Like it did.
We are.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're a rock, a guitar-based pop band, indie rock, rock and roll. You know, like, that's why even, like, back in the day, the emo thing was never, like, something that we chose, you know?
I mean, when I listen to the Get Up Kids, I'm like, oh, these are catchy songs. These are, I think what the Get Up Kids did for me, especially Something I Write Home About, was I was like, all right, I like things that are a little bit alternative. Mm-hmm. And I think that it satisfied that alternative need for pop. And I think it, you know, really solidified a place and time. Like, for me, I was like, this is a perfect pop album the way that I want.
Well, it's cool then that like, because it's definitely, like, a document of, like, where I was at and where I was at, like, lyrically, and where everybody in the band was at, like, musically speaking. So the fact that other people, because that's how we feel about it. It's like this compartmentalized, it's like, it's kind of like getting a tattoo. Yeah. You know, it's just like, this now exists here. And if I change, that still stays the same. So it's just sort of like a document of that time. And the fact that other people get a similar feeling from it makes me feel like we did a good job.
Yeah, you did a great job. I mean, it's the thing, I speak about it a lot, because we do a whole podcast on this album, and then we talk to the artist, you know, okay, or we do vice versa, right? And, you know, I said it in the album, or I think before, but, like, when I, you know, to me, if I was to, somebody was like, what is emo? I have no idea about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no fucking clue what it is. And there, I'd be like, I'd give them the first two Get Up Kids albums, and I'd go, just take, listen to this, do what you will with it. Even though what I just said, I'm like, it's pop. It kind of defined that sound, and
I mean, I don't know. If you say so. Like, the thing about the term emo is that it means so many different, it's kind of like the term punk, where it just means something different to everybody else. So, if, you know, we just try to be the best Get Up Kids we can be.
Look, man, I'm not, like, a huge fan of labels in general, because when you listen to, like, any music, you're getting some sort of emotion out of it. So it's like,
well, that's why the term seemed so sort of, like, ridiculous in the first place.
Because
it's just like, what music isn't emotional?
Yeah.
The thing I've thought about this a lot over the years. I think it comes down to, like, the lyrical content.
Yeah.
I don't think that, like, what we're doing musically is significantly different than, you know, it's two guitars, bass, drums, and keyboards. Like, it's not, we're not doing rock operas here. You know, like, we're not, it's not Bohemian Rhapsody. But I think the kind of, like, earnestness of the lyrics and the, like, that sort of aspect of the emo thing, I think, is what maybe differentiates it from punk rock in a way. I don't know. It's not my job to
figure that
out. But.
And it's not, you know, I just like music for music, right? And that's, mm-hmm. I've always have. And, like, I just happen to, you know, I grew up with metal that evolved into, like, punk, which evolved into Get Up Kids, you know, because
cool.
I was, like, the more evolved.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, that's what I started. I grew up listening to, like, Dream Theater.
Nice. See, for me, it was more like Guns N' Roses era, like, yeah. 80s hair metal. Like, I don't consider Guns N' Roses a hair metal band, but, like, you know, like, Motley Crue's first two records are some of my favorite records of all time. So I can go deep on that.
I mean, it's a really strange progression, because I've talked to a lot of people that's kind of their route to where we end up at, is that metal to punk to whatever this is, genre.
Well, yeah, for me it was like metal, and then Metallica does Garage Days, and that leads me to the Misfits, and then eventually that leads me to Bad Religion, and then that leads me to Fugazi, and then all of a sudden just like,
yeah,
you know, and then next thing you know, I'm listening to, you know, DC stuff, and then like a bunch of like 90s, like, alt-rock, indie-rock, Superchunk, Archers of Loaf,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. And then, you know, then we get to where we are today.
I think the other person that I kind of tripped out about talking to is Mark Trombino.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he... Who,
I've never met him. We have so many friends in common. I've never met him.
He's an...
Odd duck, I've
he's
heard.
A... And yeah. He, like, self-proclaimed, too.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, I'll do the interview. I'm really bad at interviews.
Yeah.
And he was. It was like, so how was doing this amazing album? And he was just like, great. And then which is funny. And like, it's like,
yeah,
a funny thing to do.
Well, he's just, honestly, he doesn't sound that different from most audio engineers that I know, because they are just they're a unique kind of, they're just a certain kind of person that just does what they do, and they want to talk about outboard gear and processors and microphones and shit, and my eyes just glaze over and I go like, just make it sound cool, man.
Yeah,
that's it.
I mean, you were recording a bunch of songs for people.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still doing that?
Yes, I have a song shop.
So when you record, how are you doing that?
I just have a little home Pro Tools rig, what's it called, a UA Apollo, and then an SM7, and just kind of do it. That's how I do, like, most of the, like, if I'm doing either the song shop stuff or if I'm doing demos, or, like, I've been working on a solo record and I did all the vocals at home and the acoustic guitar at home. So, you know, just, it's a little space in my garage.
Have you ever written a song like for somebody else and been like, fuck, that should have been a Get Up Kid song?
Not a Get Up Kid song, but I have had songs that I've, one time early on where I was just like, I think I'd like to make this one of my songs if that's cool with you, and they were like, yeah, that's totally fine.
So, really?
Yeah.
I was wondering
if they had said no, I wouldn't have done it, but
because, you know, there was a time where, you know, I think Max Bemis was doing that too.
He still does, I think.
Yeah. Also Odd Duck, also just the wildest guy ever.
He's weird. He's a good guy. He sends me texts at like 4 a.m. because he doesn't sleep. He's like a vampire.
I know.
And so I'll get like 10 texts from Max when I wake up in the morning, and I'm just like, there's no point in me texting you back. You're asleep now. Like,
he was one of the first interviews I did. I was on K-Rock for like a couple years.
Okay.
Especially over the pandemic, and he was one of the first interviews I did.
He's a trip, man.
He's
a unique person.
I really feel like some of the songwriters in this genre are the best songwriters in the entire world. I really, Chris Conley, you, Jim Adkins, I'm just like the fucking pop guys.
Well, thank you. That's high praise. That's good company to be in.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, you've been doing this album for, I guess I kind of want to, you recorded 4 Minute Mile in like
2.5 days.
Yeah. Do you think that, I guess this might sound bad, I don't know.
Huh?
This might sound bad, but do you think that with something to write home about, you had so much more time and money, do you think that anything that the Get Up Kids was in 4 Minute Mile that you wanted to achieve, did you lose any of that or gain what you became as a band?
I don't think we lost anything. Other than, if you want to be technical, you could say, like, you know, any kind of, like, loss of innocence. I mean, you lose a certain amount of innocence when you make your second record because you've made a record before. Like, 4 Minute Mile is very much, like, it's hard for me to relate to that record a whole lot because it's like a 19-year-old
right,
doing something for the first time. And then, like, a tattoo, like I was saying before, it exists as a document. Even, like, couldn't be more different than that person in that wrote those songs is now. So, you know, you there's that thing about how you have your whole life to make your first record, and you know, that is true, but it was very much just sort of like, there's an element of it which is sort of like losing your virginity.
Yeah,
you know, which is like, you're not, it definitely happened and you definitely did the best that you could, but you could probably do a better job.
I did not do the best that I could.
Yeah, well.
And that's not like, it's not a dig or anything.
No. And like, but the thing is, like, that's what's one of the beauties about punk rock is that, like, you know, the imperfections of that record, I think, are one of the things that make it endearing. And we totally get that and would never, like, fuck with it. But I will say that, like, when I sing those songs now and I sing them better and in key, no one complains.
Yeah.
But when I listen to that record, I'm just like, oh, the vocals are so bad.
It was the first time that I heard anybody, like, I heard something that wasn't perfect that was perfect to me.
And I appreciate that. I feel that way about, like, Captain Jazz.
Yeah.
You know, like,
like Piebald. I feel that way
about totally. Same
where I'm just like, where actually, though, I'm like, you are, I don't know if you're trying to not sing on on Kaylee. Like,
oh no, I'm I
no,
I just,
Travis. I was like, I don't, I can't tell if you're doing this.
Oh, he might be fucking with you. Yeah, that's true. He's a weird dude.
He is a weird dude.
But yeah, I mean, hey man.
Hey, how's it going?
But yeah, I mean, the whole thing is like we would have made a more polished record if we had known better, had more money, had more time. I mean, Ryan was still in high school. The reason we made it in 2.5 days is because we had to like sneak him out of high school and drive to Chicago and then get him back in time to go to school. So, you know, but you know, sometimes it's happy accidents. You know, it's like.
Yeah, look.
Necessity is the mother of invention. What is it? Necessity is the mother of invention? Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, what I do for a job is a happy accident. It was the right time, right place, right people, you know, and I'm get the opportunity to do stuff like this, yeah. Right? And so I get it 100%. And
it all leads us to this point.
Yeah. And I don't know, is there... Look, I know you got a cruise to soundcheck at some point.
I was more just kind of observing who was showing up.
Yeah.
I'm sort of like waiting for someone to start making noise, so I have to yell at them and tell them, I'm doing an interview.
I know, I actually want you to be kind of scary on this thing, so I can be like, he was, see, I told you, look.
Yeah,
was.
Okay, good.
Like, he yelled at him. But I mean, like...
I just look like an asshole. I'm not actually an asshole.
When I was like, hey, I'm Morgan, I was like, I don't think he's a dick. No. I was like, I don't think that this... I think that you have the same thing I have, where people read us as we're being...
Yeah, I'm direct.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very direct, and I think some people take that between my position as a performer and, you know, whatever it is that I do, and, like, the whole beard thing. Like, you know, I look like a January 6th...
Yeah. I mean, I look like a homeless person.
Well,
so
there you go.
Hold on, I'm going to see if this is. I want to make sure. Oh, we're still good. Fuck yes, dude. I'm doing a good job by myself.
Well, good. Congratulations. I think you are doing a good job.
Thank you. I think you are doing a great job. That, congratulations on 25 years of the best album. Literally, fucking, it's so good, dude. I'm sorry that like, it's so goddamn good.
Oh, thank you.
It's really like my sister. I text my sister today, and I was like, hey, I'm. You know, she knows what I do. We've done like a bunch of shit over. We have like we DJ a bunch of big things, and she's like, "Cool, cool." I was like, "I'm interviewing the Get Up Kids," and she's like, "Shut the fuck up." Hmm. You know, it's just like a insanely pivotal moment. You know, unfortunately and fortunately, if it wasn't for you, I might not be doing. You know, maybe when I wouldn't have. I'm sure somebody would have done it.
I don't know, man. Like who? You know, everything brings us to here.
Yeah. You know? No, I think. If there's anything, like, I know you did something to write home about pretty close to where I live.
It was in Silver Lake.
Yeah, yeah. So pretty close to where I live. Kind of talked to Chris Connolly about this, mm-hmm. And, you know, you did the first album back home, right?
Yeah, it was in Chicago.
Yeah, Easty, Midwest. Like, that's where I'm like, I don't fucking know. But going to California and doing this album... Did you write a lot of the stuff there or prior?
No, we did a lot of most of the stuff is demoed from back in Kansas. Like, we did some, like, pre-production in, like, a rehearsal studio, but a lot of it was pretty fleshed out by the time we got here, so.
Do you think that, like, being in and recording in California had an effect on the way that the album sounded? Los Angeles specifically.
I don't know that it was California or Los Angeles specific. Definitely being away from home and having the freedom to just have a month to focus on the record and not have to worry about anything else, not have to worry about school or work or, you know, like it's a luxury of having enough money. So it's just like a privilege thing, but. I didn't get to experience much of L.A. or California because I was so laser-focused. It was like, get up, eat breakfast, go to the studio, be at the studio for 16 hours, come home, go to bed, you know?
Were you, you know, at that time, were you, like, aware of what you were doing? You know, you're young. Yeah, no, like,
We just wanted to make a record that sounded better than 4 Minute Mile did.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Even being in a band and not being... Being like, oh, I'm gonna tour. I'm gonna do this.
Well, we had done that for the 2 years before we made the record. That there was a definite point in that first tour that we did in 1997 where we were like, because we were just going to take the summer to go on tour and then everybody was going to go back to school. Excuse me. But then, like, at some point during that tour, we were like, I think we could do this and school's always going to be there. Like, who knows if this will continue to be here or not. So we decided to take that leap. And then we spent the next two solid years touring. So by the time we got out here to do something for Humbug, we were a pretty well-oiled machine.
I mean, has it, over the years, like, has there been, like, a, you know, because you have kids now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you, like, you guys got to do this path? Because, I mean, I think we're, I think you're a little bit older than me, but not by much. And, I, you know, growing up, I knew that, you know, it was go to school, go to college, get a job, get married, kind of that's the fucking thing to do. And you know, is it, how is it raising kids, like being a tour musician from this punk rock world?
Well, I don't have those expectations on them because I, it certainly didn't work well for me to have that kind of like white picket fence sort of expectation on me. So I mean, honestly, all of my kids are pretty musical, and it's, if anything, what I think they can take away from what I do is that, like, you can make a living in the arts. It's just a lot of work, and it's maybe a lot of struggle, and there's a lot of luck involved, but it's mostly hard work, and that, you know, it's not like this, like, glamorous, like, even if you're successful, it's still work.
Like, you're, you know? And a lot of the time it's just sitting around.
Yes.
Like, if you're touring, like, I mean, we only did one, like, work, because we're constantly, like, on tour.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we can have shows in, like, six cities in a night, but, like, we did, like, one tour on a bus, mm-hmm. and I, it's the first time I've ever experienced that, just sitting most of the day.
Yeah. It's a lot of hurry up and wait.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like, do they have aspirations to do this?
Maybe. I don't know. It's kind of, I'm not trying to push it or anything.
Yeah.
So.
How old are they?
They're old. They're not even kids anymore. They're 22, 20, and 18.
I mean, do they think you're cool? They think,
no,
like,
not at all. they're my friends more than anything at this point, so.
That's really funny. Yeah, no, I didn't know if they were, like, young or.
No, I technically don't have any children anymore because they're all over 18. They're all adults.
That's so wild. That's really crazy. I did hear you. I listened to they did like a thing with Jim Adkins a minute ago. And
oh, yeah.
They were helping you. Your kids were like helping you.
Yeah, that's my youngest, Jersey. He's my tech guy.
Are they great? Are they good at tech? It seems like you're not bad at it.
I'm, for my age, I'm decent at it, but, like, yeah, they're much more technical than I am.
Were you always like that, like, growing up with, because we were of the age where.
I mean, it's, you know, I remember the time before the internet, so, you know, I'm not technophobic, I'm not, like, I don't feel the need to get the new tech every time it comes out.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And
like, I'm always kind of skeptical. I'm just like, okay, well, that's cool and new, but is it necessary?
Do I need it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then sometimes
we do.
I remember thinking that about when iPads came out. And I was like, I'm not sure that I need this. And then eventually I did. I needed it to do merch. You know, like, that's really all I use it for, you know?
A lot of young kids listen to this.
Okay.
Like, this podcast. Men, they talk shit on me, so fuck you guys. But no, it's okay. I don't mind it, and I bring it up on myself. But I kind of wanted to give them a little bit of a glimpse of what it's like discovering music and being in a band before the internet. Because, I mean, fucking, they just don't know.
I mean, it's the same thing, just it's a little bit, it's like an extra step. It's still other people curating things for you, and, you know, it's just more word of mouth. And, you know, the internet is the same, you know, field. It's just sort of, like, way quicker and way easier to connect with other people. Like, you had to, like, you know, physically mail a cassette to somebody. But, you know, now you can just send them a file. It just, like, it just makes things... It's the same thing. It's not like the internet changed the way the language works. It just changed the speed at which we can communicate.
I mean, I remember without the internet and the internet, I'm like right there where it was like we had yes and no.
Yeah.
And I remember like that's kind of how I did music discovery. And so growing up, like, how are you going out and actually, were you like physically going to record stores or?
Yeah.
Did you have older friends that were like?
Well, there's some formative people in Kansas City and some all ages clubs and one really great record store that I had the privilege to work at for a little while that was called Recycled Sounds. And it would be like, it was very much like a, oh, have you heard this? Oh, have you heard, oh, you like this? Have you heard this? And so, you know, it was, I didn't have like older siblings or anything like that, but I had like older like friends who were in bands. And I started playing in bands when I was 15. So I was always the youngest person around. So I was always absorbing what everybody else was throwing into the pot.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Yeah.
My partner's going to kill me, but like I remember there were these, it doesn't make any sense to anybody, but for some reason, a bunch of Bosnians came over to Tucson where I grew up.
Okay.
And they all loved like 3 Mile Pilot and
cool.
like all of that stuff. They showed me all of like No Knife.
Yeah.
And so I was in bands with all those guys doing that, and that's kind of what got me into all of this.
Yeah. Which is, that's awesome.
Yeah, and they were just like a couple years older than me. And like shaped the.
It's funny now because you see people who are wearing like that era of like I saw somebody wearing an Indian Summer shirt at one of our shows one time, and I was like, that's a 7-inch I had in like 1995. I didn't know that was still a thing, you know, like, so that's cool that like it got that far.
It's really wild. And I didn't know about it as the thing. So, I know that we have mainly talked about like, I really covered a broad bunch of shit, but this is about something to write home about.
That's okay. We should probably just wrap it up though. Cause I gotta go.
I'm like, do you have, you know, you've done a lot of interviews. Anything that not been said, that's what I think is awesome about this album, that you're like, I can't just look up this fucking guy saying this. Kind of put you on the spot.
Trying to think.
Or any good stories from recording. Those are the things I really like.
I've told the story before, but not very often, is that like when we were recording, so the studio we were at was called Mad Hatter, and it was in Silver Lake, and it was, they had this grand piano there. And it was this like $300,000 Steinway piano, and it was signed by all these people. So like Paul McCartney had played it, and he signed it and stuff. And that's what James played the piano line on "I'll Catch You" on. But the thing is he was walking into the booth and didn't realize that the sliding glass door was shut, and just rammed right into it with a full throttle with his head, and cut his head open. So he went, and we're like, "Why don't you lay down?" And he's like, "No, I'll just do the take." So the take of "I'll Catch You" on the piano, he's bleeding on the piano, and then he had to lay down when he was done. But we're like, don't bleed on this priceless instrument or whatever. And then at the very end, you can hear him slamming the piano key lid down, and that's just him kind of like falling over because he was getting lightheaded and stuff like that. So
that is a great story. Cool. I'm going to listen to that song in a whole different way. Dude bleeding on the piano.
Yeah, just imagine that. That's more metal than emo, I guess, but like it's still.
I have one personal question. What is the synth that you guys use? Like, what is that main synth that you guys use throughout the first?
A Moog Prodigy.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I couldn't look it up. It's not anywhere on the internet. Because I was
really?
Like, yeah,
I think it's in the music in the action video. I think it's that's the keyboard he was.
I tried to literally look at, you know, you can type anything into the internet. Yeah. Like they used X amount of gear on this, and I was like, whatever that is, I'm gonna buy it because I went back to school for music.
Well, you can still do it,
dude. But well, thank you so much.
That's
my sign.
He's like the, you know, the guy at the Apollo that has the cane.
Yes,
that pulls people
he's
off.
Pulling us off. Yeah. I really. Again, really appreciate it. And thank you for speaking to me candidly.
Cheers.
Yeah, you're the best.
Thanks.
Dude.
Thank you very much.